This week is all about safeties, why they are finally getting paid, how Eric Weddle changes the Rams, and how the Ravens change Earl Thomas, the uniqueness of Derwin James, and our ranking of the top 10 safeties in football. It is all on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. The position ranking series rolls on, our penultimate show in this year's series. We're talking safeties today, Andy.
An increasingly important position, and we've said that for a few years. And I know our first topic that I think we're diving into is why the NFL completely disagreed with us last year for the value of the safeties, and then why they overwhelmingly agreed with us this year.
League-wide, everyone's listening to the show and they are doing what we demand. So yeah, that was the conversation a year ago. It took a couple of these guys a long time to get contracts, and we all said, why are people not paying safeties? And now this offseason, you had Landon Collins, Earl Thomas, LaMarcus Joyner, Adrian Amos, Tyrann Mathieu, Clinton Dix. So now the question is, why are safeties being paid such an exorbitant amount of money?
Yeah, I had a conversation with Kenny Vaccaro at Titans minicamp, and he said kind of offhandedly, "Oh, I wish I'd become I wish I wasn't a free agent last year, but this year." And I hadn't thought of that. Those poor guys that signed last year worked out okay. Vaccaro wound up getting a long term deal with the Titans eventually, but I don't think we've ever seen one position's value jump as high as safeties did from 2018 to 2019. I mean, maybe our listeners can think of a year where that happened. Maybe it happened artificially with a contract for a quarterback on a year where the salary cap went up significantly. I don't know, but it's unbelievable how that position's value changed in free agency. And I think it's just a market correction, Gary. I don't think it's anything other than it was bizarrely wrong in 2018. Guys got undervalued. Eric Reed was one of them. And now it's been corrected.
Yeah. And let's talk about that, because we talked about last year, all these teams using all these three safety alignments, and let's discuss that again. Was there any sort of change around the league that more teams are going with three safety sub packages? Is this a trend playing into it?
I've wondered about that a little bit, because you'd think if there's more safeties on the field, then there's a bigger demand for the position. But like Adrian Phillips to me is a good example of a guy. We'll see. He's on a 1-year deal with $2 million in a cap hit, and he just signed that deal this year. I thought Adrian Phillips, and he's a dime safety for the Chargers, so he plays linebacker in their dime package. He's a good litmus test, because he's the quintessential dime safety. He's who we're talking about. I thought his contract would be a lot more valuable than it was. He's on a 1-year prove-it deal, basically. So the Adrian Phillipses of the world, the guys where the evolution of the safety position is striking at the richest level, they're not seeing the benefits yet. It's the top-end safeties. It's the starters. It's the Pro Bowl caliber guys like your Earl Thomas or your Landon Collins. And maybe, and now we're getting into economics, I don't know how that works, but maybe it's just this is a delay in the market correction, because Adrian Phillips should be getting paid more than $2 million based on the contracts of other recently signed safeties.
It has been just so extreme, though, year to year. I mean, we were talking last year, none of these guys were getting contracts, and now all of a sudden, we had five or six guys getting major contracts. It's just, it is bizarre, to say the least. But, getting back to the three safety sub packages, just let's discuss a little bit. What's the advantage of doing that as opposed to just the traditional a bunch of cornerbacks, a bunch of pure cover guys throwing out there?
Well, basically, in the simplest terms, cornerbacks are not good enough run support players, and linebackers are not good enough coverage players. And so you have a problem. And as a defense, you have to figure out, what do we do with that third option, that or that number four receiver, whatever it is, the tight end? How are we covering these guys inside? We don't have linebackers that can cover. And if we put a corner on them, we are going to get the ball run on us. So the safety is just a happy medium. He's Minkah Fitzpatrick, for example, plays safety in a lot of the Dolphins packages, but he plays slot corner in some of their other packages. They call that a big nickel package, where your safety is the number three cornerback, basically. And that's a nice happy medium for the Dolphins. And that's an important tactic when they play the team like New England that can run and throw the ball out of two tight end sets. Big nickel's a good package to play. The Vikings are doing that as well with Jayron Kearse. He was their big nickel cornerback last year. Mackenzie Alexander, who's a littler corner, he's their passing down nickel back. So it's just about schematic versatility. And I don't think this three safety thing is going away, Gary, because it gives you too many answers. You basically can get an extra safety. Some teams are playing four safeties because you get the extra safety at corner, and then you can get the extra safety at linebacker. And we saw the Chargers in the playoffs last year. They really exhibited the value of that. More speed on the field. It's a speed game now with these spread formations, especially. You need linebackers who can run, and typically safeties run better than linebackers. So just use them.
Yeah, and this all sort of trends toward, you know, positionless football. That's what we're hearing about. That's what's gaining more and more traction around the league. In the lead up to the draft, you had the Patriots were linked consistently to Jawan Williams, who they eventually took in the second round. He was the Vanderbilt cornerback. He's a 6'4" guy, and Bill Belichick made the point a couple of times during draft season. You got all these big, fast receivers and big, fast tight ends coming to the league. Who are you going to guard them with? Guy like Williams is mm-hmm. your answer, and I think they're still listing him as a cornerback, but it's pretty clear he's going to play some sort of non-traditional hybrid type of role for them.
Absolutely, and when I did that, I feel like we referenced that Gronkowski story from 3 years ago every show, and I probably need to move on or at least write another good story at some point. But when I had that story, Belichick made the point that they view tight ends in New England almost strictly as wide receivers anymore. So the fact that they're taking corners or long body defensive backs, and with the idea of who matches to the tight end, that of course they are. And Patrick Chung's a big part of what they do. And in the Super Bowl, they moved their corner, Jonathan Jones, to safety. So it can go both ways as well. They're very flexible there in New England. The more flexible you are with your defensive backs, really there's two keys for the Patriots. And they're a good example because it's setting the market for how the safety position is going to be utilized across the league. The two keys are versatility and man coverage ability. Those two things. Are you versatile and can you match up the guys? And if you can, you play any, then you can play anywhere in New England's secondary. And that's another team that puts a lot of safeties on the field. You know, Gary, let's take it a step deeper as well, because I think what we're saying is a little bit obvious when you stop and look at it. It's, oh yeah, okay, of course you want more speed, so you replace a linebacker with a safety. But you have to understand the way offenses are attacking defenses now too. We talk about cover three a lot on this show, and then all these over routes that you get against cover three. So the inside slot receiver runs deep and diagonal across the field, and the only guy left to guard him out of cover three per the rules of that coverage is the backside linebacker. So you get mm-hmm. a wide receiver and a linebacker. So the Chargers made that point when they went to those seven defensive back packages against the Ravens. And think about that for a minute. They're playing a run-based offense, and they decided to go with more safeties rather than linebackers. They did that in part because the Ravens kill you with over routes. They do a lot of those over routes, and the Chargers thought, if we can take that away, then not only do we have the speed on the field to handle Lamar Jackson in that running game, but we also eliminate a lot of the foundation of their passing game. And then what does that do to the rest of the offense? So defenses get exploited by design. That's what offenses do. They sit around and scheme ways to beat defenses. And so the defense, you can't just change the scheme. The schemes are usually sound, but you can change the personnel that executes the scheme.
Well, let's stick adjacent to the Ravens at this point. Let's talk about a recently former Raven. And we usually don't get team specific in this part of the show, but I do want to talk about what's going on in Los Angeles with the Rams. They're switching between two pretty unique players. You had the kind of undersized LaMarcus Joyner there last year, and now, of course, it's going to be Eric Weddle there. And I'm just wondering, Andy, because Weddle, I'll spoil it, he just missed our countdown, so we're not going to go deep into him during the rankings portion of the show. But what do you expect them to do differently with Weddle in the lineup instead of Joyner this season?
I guarantee there'll be a lot more disguises, because that's just the way Eric Weddle plays. He'll do he'll run around the field and he'll line up on the line of scrimmage before the snap and then drop back and play free safety even after the snap. And And he'll do that on his own. That stuff's not necessarily built in. He was telling me a story about when I went and watched film with him in LA a few months ago, and he was telling me a story about the first time he did that, a disguise on his own with Jimmy Smith, and they were in a cover two call. So Weddle's supposed to be back over the top of Jimmy Smith, and Jimmy Smith's in press position. He looks over and he sees Eric Weddle, his help, down on the line of scrimmage. And Smith starts looking around and looking to the sideline, wondering, you know, hey, do I have the call correct? And they snap the ball. So Jimmy Smith does what you're supposed to do, which is play the coverage that you believe is called. Don't try to guess if you're not sure you have it right. You got to commit to something. So he committed to the cover two. And sure enough, it worked out fine. Eric Weddle was behind him. But Jimmy Smith read him the riot act after that, put his hands in the air. Hey, what are you doing? You can't do that. And Eric Weddle said, yes, you know, yes, I can. I'm not going to leave you hanging to dry. Eric Weddle's going to play that way. So the Rams are going to become a more multiple defense just by having him on the field, or at least they're going to have the illusion of multiplicity. Cover two in that Jimmy Smith play, cover two is a simple coverage, and yet look how complex it felt to Jimmy Smith in that scenario, and then to the defense or to the offense as well. So more diversification from the Rams. I think Weddle's a downgrade from Joyner athletically, but that's not a big deal. They didn't, you know, Joyner was not quite as versatile as he could have been in that scheme. They didn't, I guess they felt they didn't need him to be. So I think they'll be just fine in Los Angeles. And in fact, I think they'll be a more difficult defense to play against because they're not going to be as predictable as maybe they were in past years.
All right. Do you think it takes a little while for the corners to get used to playing with a guy like Weddle, or are they ready to go with this after seeing what he did in Baltimore?
That's a great question. In Baltimore, it would definitely take some time to get used to playing with Weddle because that system has a lot of rules for help. Well, let's put it this way. That system in Baltimore has a lot of rules for help coverage. It's a zone scheme with a ton of matchup principles in it. And the way the Ravens match up, it's a little bit different than the way most teams match up out of zone. So it's different rules, and the guy you're only doing that and matching up and not matching up based on where your safety help is. So yeah, it's important that cornerbacks understand the detail of the safety. I'd say though, Gary, it's more important for the safety to understand the corners a little bit, because the safety has to help in a way that's productive for the corner. He has to make the corner's job easier, or he has to hide a cornerback's weakness. So it's more important for the safety to understand the corner, but the more those guys understand each other, the better they are. That was the thing with the Patriots, back to them, is people were saying within football, they've got three corners, Daron Harmon, Devin McCourty, Patrick Chung, three safeties who have played together for a long time. Mm-hmm. When you know the little details of everyone around you, that does make you that much blurrier as a defense.
Yeah. I wonder if we'll see some early season growing pains with the Rams, and then they really hit their stride in December and January, which would probably be just fine with them.
Yeah, that would be. And I agree with you. That's a great point as well, because their corners are not pure matchup corners. It's Tlaib is an off coverage matchup corner. He's not a press corner necessarily. And Marcus Peters is a much better zone defender than man defender. So with Weddle, just by that reasoning, you would expect to see maybe a little bit more zone with the Rams than man to man. But we'll find out. And they'll probably have hybrid coverages within it anyway.
All right. We are just about ready to move on to our rankings, but first, a quick programming note. As you might have noticed, Jenny and Connor and Albert, they're back. They did a show this past week. They will be doing shows going forward. We're going to shuffle the lineup a little bit going into the season, but right now we're back to a near daily product to roll out for you at this point. Also on Friday, the show previous to this one on your feed was the Bad Movie Podcast. It was Connor Orr, Bette Marston, and guess who else, Andy?
Who else?
You? Me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. I heard it. It was really good.
Thank you. What was your favorite part specifically?
Oh, the part where Bette made the comment and you gave a really strong rebuttal. Near the middle.
That you got lucky. Now we watched Gus, which I'd never seen before. It's a 70s Disney movie about it's a field goal kicking mule. It's a documentary. So
is it really a documentary?
It is not. Okay. No, it's a movie about a mule that kicks field goals and helps a Los Angeles generic team win the Super Bowl.
The Colts had an ass who kicked field goals. Vanderjack, remember
Vanderjack,
him?
Yeah. You know, we were simultaneously disappointed and kind of respectful that that they didn't use the go for the ass joke in that movie.
But, which I just did.
Which you just did, but it was 70s Disney. It's gritty in the 70s. Like you could have a G-rated movie where you made a joke like that, but they didn't go for it. They didn't pick the low hanging fruit. So respect. It's probably why Disney has had so much success over the years. Decisions like that.
Yeah.
But yes, if you don't already, please subscribe to the MMQB podcast. You will never regret it. But let's get to our rankings right now. Our third voter this week is the great Reed Foster, back to help us out with this. We had 25 players receive votes because Andy Reed and I all put out our top 20. I am going to read the 15 and the others receiving votes, and then we will unveil the top 10. Here we go.
All right.
In order from fewest votes to most votes, Rashad Jones, Jesse Bates, Jordan Poyer, Malik Hooker, Patrick Chung, LaMarcus Joyner, Eric Reed, Ricardo Allen, Buda Baker, Adrian Amos, Micah Hyde, Tyrann Mathieu, Keanu Neal, Eric Weddle, Tony Jefferson. We're actually tied, the two teammates last year. That was nice.
And best friends. Weddle was in Jefferson's wedding.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Weddle was integral in recruiting Jefferson to Baltimore.
That's what we said. That's what we were saying last year. We kept on saying, look at what the Ravens did. They invested at the safety position. They got two great safeties, and look at what they do now. They're one of the best defenses in football.
Yeah, and when we get to Earl Thomas, who I'm assuming will be in our top 10, we need to talk about what the Ravens will do this year with their safeties, because I think that's one of the 10 most interesting football storylines coming into the season, if you ask me. And also, by the way, the Ravens are another team that play with that big nickel, or really it's a big dime package. They put Anthony Levine on the field. He's a linebacker safety for them.
And by the way, we have two players in the top 10 who switched teams this offseason. So you can go through your mind and race real quick and see if you can come up with it. But I'm going to start reading the list right now. Number 10 is one of those players, Landon Collins. And then we had a tie for 8, Eddie Jackson and Malcolm Jenkins. I guess let's start with Collins. He's a guy who we've kind of we've respected the fact that he came into the league as really, I mean, he was more linebacker than safety almost as a rookie, and he has become a solid cover guy. Does it make sense to bring him in Washington? I feel like Washington sort of rotated some quality safeties, maybe not quite as good as Collins over the last couple of years.
Yeah, and kind of he's a good guy to bring a lot of our topics into one basket here, because there was a cover three defense that considered signing him in free agency as a linebacker this year. Back to the reason, you want those speed at linebacker to cover those over routes and those deep patterns. Mm-hmm. So the NFL views Landon Collins as like a hybrid cover guy. He's probably, it'd be interesting to see him at a dime linebacker role. You could play him at deep safety on regular downs, and then in passing situations, move him to linebacker if you wanted. But you don't have to do that with Collins, because as you said, he's gotten a lot better in coverage. He can match up even in space to most tight ends now. He might not win it every single snap, but the fact that he can do it really gives you a lot of freedom in your coverage, and he's going to win his fair share of those snaps. So I have a lot of respect for Collins. It's hard to get better at man coverage in the NFL once you enter the NFL. It's a hard skill to build on the fly, I would think. Another guy who did that years ago is Eric Berry. Got a lot better in man coverage as well.
Eddie Jackson, real quick, the undersized ball hawk out in Chicago. I think we're going to talk a lot about the relationship between the pass rush and coverage when we do the cornerback show next week. But I mean, it's nice to have a guy like Jackson on the back end when you have a pass rush like the Bears do. I feel like he is probably more valuable to the Bears than he would be to anyone else. But by the same token, he's really valuable for the Bears. I mean, he converts these, he allows the pass rush to convert these, convert this pressure into turnovers.
Absolutely. And he's a home run player. And I struggle with him a little bit because I think he has too many negative plays for a guy as good as he is. Certainly the big playability is undeniable. He needs to become a more consistent and willing tackler and a more disciplined pursuer in terms of his angles downfield, especially mostly it's in run support or after the catch, chasing a tackle. So I hope he gets better there. The Bears, I'm sure, are hoping that because they let Adrian Amos go, which means they're probably planning on paying Jackson a big deal long term, and it's his time to come. But remember, they're going to that Chuck Pagano scheme now. It's a big adjustment for that whole defense. Chuck Pagano is going to be more man coverage, one deep safety. Let's blitz him, which might play well to Jackson. It'll be interesting to see if he's the blitzer or a man defender or the free safety even in that equation. And then the other thing that that you lose are some of the blurry zone looks that the Bears have been in. And Jackson, you could say, did a lot to hide Chicago's corners. I think they're good, but not great corners. Mm-hmm. Jackson in that old scheme did. It was Amos as well. That element changes now. So if those corners start getting beat in Chicago more, how do we start viewing Eddie Jackson? We'll see. I'm eager to see how that one plays out. But I'm eager to see. I'm cautiously optimistic on Jackson. I don't think he was not in my top 10. I had him number 12.
Yeah, he was Reed and I both had him right around 5. I just shut down the rankings here. Here we go. Reed and I both had him at, I had him at 6. Reed had him at 4. So there you go.
I've heard mixed reviews from coaches on him. Some have agreed, yeah, he's got some really bad snaps on film, and it's even embarrassing at times. And other coaches I've heard have said, yeah, but his range is incredible, and we really feared him. So yeah, and it's probably all true. It's all valid.
Number 7, Quandre Diggs. Number 6, Devin McCourty. And we got to highlight Diggs right here because you have proclaimed Quandre Diggs the most underrated player in the NFL.
Well, maybe not now that we're putting him at number 7 here, but I love Quandre Diggs, and nobody has talked about him for years. He's Quentin Jammer's little brother, by the way, which I just recently learned that. Mm-hmm. No one's talked about him. So I was watching film with the Lions coach a few years ago, and I said, this guy, 28 Diggs, you know, like, do you guys think he's good? And the coach said, oh my God. He goes, that guy, and this is the highest compliment a coach can say when he has this intonation. He said, that guy is a football player, and he does everything well, and he just has a natural gift and knack for the game. He doesn't have the body type that you'd expect. He looks more like a slot corner, which he can play that at times. But he just understands. If, let's put it this way, if Eddie Jackson had Quandre Diggs' discipline and knack for all the little things in football, that'd be the best safety in the NFL by a pretty good margin.
Yeah, I mean, he's an undersized guy, but he's a physical guy.
Yes, he is, and he can match to tight ends, like big tight ends. So he's an overachieving, underrated, outstanding, I would almost even say within the context of Detroit scheme, even a step beyond that, because he was good in Patricia's scheme last year, and I thought he was a little bit better in the previous scheme. I'd say he's a star.
I like it. Let's go to the top 5. Two young guys here at 5 and 4. Number 5, Jamal Adams. Number 4, Derwin James. We didn't talk about Jamal Adams much last season, mostly because the Jets were kind of an also ran all year. But I don't want to say he's quite underrated at this point, because obviously he's a headliner and on a New York team. But I feel like he might have been forgotten about a little bit, and maybe in part because Derwin James emerged as such a star on the other side of the country.
Yeah, that could be. I mean, Adams has a lot of followers on social media for a guy who's not very active on social media. I think the New York stardom is a factor with him. What are you laughing at?
I don't know. I don't know why we're measuring that as part of his value here.
Well, because I think when you don't, you're right. Because Twitter is a little bit of a self-contained universe. But when you're not active on Twitter, and then you sign up and you get a bunch of followers, to me, that's evidence of fame. Like, you're the people that tweet a lot and engage a lot, they're going to have more followers. That's the nature of it. But the people who don't do anything and have a ton of followers, to me, that's only because they're famous.
Well, I don't do anything and I have a lot of followers, so I don't have a lot of followers, but I'm trying to keep the ratio, more followers than tweets. And I'm still winning that battle.
Yeah, that's a good way. I like that too. I always look at that as well, because sometimes you'll see someone with 60,000 followers and they'll say, oh, they tweeted 225,000 times, which means they're just standing in a room talking a lot of the time and nobody's listening to them. You also wonder how they're doing any of their work when they're tweeting that much. But, I think Adams is, I think he justify, I'm going to say he's very famous, Gary. In fact, I'm going to say he's the most famous safety who ever played. That's what I'm going to say. I think he justifies the fame to a large degree. I think he's a really good player. I think he's lived up to his draft hype. He's faster than probably every other safety in the league. He plays, I don't know what his 40 time is, but he plays faster, which is what matters. He is great in the box, and I think he's pretty good in coverage, especially when the ball's in the air. I don't know if he's a pure matchup cover guy, and I know some teams have felt comfortable with him in, like, we feel we can go after, not go after him, but we like our chances against him in coverage. Mm-hmm. But he has this innate knack for the ball. It's a lot like Quandre Diggs, back to him. He has an innate knack for the details of football, angles and paths to the ball. Adams is like a savage version of Diggs. He has an innate feel for just going and getting the ball, path or angles. You know, that stuff sorts itself out. He's a ball hunter.
And you love Derwin James, especially as a blitzer.
And if you don't, then I don't know what you're looking at. His blitzing, they need to do more of that in Los Angeles. It's not a big part of their scheme because they're a cover three defense. Yeah. And they've got the personnel to do it. Yeah, but they need to add – you need to be adjusting to your scheme, and they did a nice job with it last year, and I think they need to do even more with it this year. And James, he's long. Have we ever seen a safety with the kind of body that Derwin James has?
Probably, but off the top of my head, you know what I always think when I see him. Do you remember Taylor Mays, who
great one?
And it turned out, I mean, Taylor Mays just couldn't really change directions or anything. He was just a very stiff athlete. He was very fast going, running straight forward, but just couldn't, you know. He didn't have any sort of lateral range. And Derwin James is kind of what everyone thought Taylor Mays might be.
I wish I was the one that thought of that. That is perfect analysis. In fact, let's switch roles, and I'm gonna run point on the show, and you're gonna tell me about these guys. So number three on our countdown is Harrison Smith, who got one first place vote. Gary, what do you think of Harrison Smith?
Heck of a Viking, Andy. Mm-hmm. No, your old saying on Harrison Smith is never misses a tackle.
Yeah, I guess I have said that. He doesn't miss tackles. In that scheme, Gary, it's really important that the safeties do tackle, because what the Vikings play is quarters coverage, which we've talked about on the show before. It's four guys deep. Each guy's got a fourth of the field, two outside corners, and then the safeties inside. And the Vikings are the most aggressive team in the NFL out of quarters coverage. And by that, basically what it starts with is their safeties play lower. They don't play back as deep, and they become very important run fit players because of that. So they attack routes and they attack the ball downhill. So you have to trust your safeties a lot to make the right read and be reliable tacklers if you're going to be aggressive out of cover four or quarters coverage with them.
Number two, Andy, Earl Thomas. Earl Thomas in Baltimore. What are we looking at here?
There's two schools of thought with Earl Thomas in Baltimore. The original school of thought when he first signed, I bet you most people around the NFL said, oh, well, okay, that makes sense. He's the free safety, the deep post player, the middle field guy. And Tony Jefferson, who prefers to play in the box, is the strong safety, natural strong safety. That's what these guys have played. Perfect. And I don't think it's going to go that way. I think Earl Thomas is going to take on the shape of the Ravens defense more than the Ravens adjusting to him. So in Seattle, Earl Thomas was a free safety. But Baltimore is their scheme begins with the diversity and disguises of their safeties and coverage. Will Thomas play back deep more often than not? Yeah, probably. But he's going to have to play matchup coverage. He's going to have to line up in different positions. He'll be a versatile I don't want to say free safety, because, you know, he's an untethered safety. Both of those guys are interchangeable safeties, and it's going to be interesting to see. And I think he's going to do real well with it, Gary, because in Seattle, what got lost was in third down situations, they would move Earl Thomas from free safety to strong safety, because in their scheme, the strong safety has more immediate coverage responsibilities than the free safety does. So the Falcons do the same thing. They put Ricardo Allen at strong safety, and Keanu Neal plays free safety if it's an obvious passing situation. So it's not like Thomas has only been this deep center field patroller before. In fact, he also played a lot of man coverage in Seattle before he got hurt, and he became a pretty good on-ball defender down there in traffic.
Yeah, it's going to be nice, because I feel like he got typecast a little bit as a Seahawks single high guy in Seattle, and now you're going to get to see him do all the things he's capable of doing but wasn't asked to do on a regular basis with the Seahawks. But number one here, a favorite of the MMQB podcast, Kevin Byard.
Kevin Byard. And so last week we talked about Aaron Donald, and I'd mentioned I was on the Russillo podcast, and we said Donald has the biggest gap between him at number one in his position and then whoever's number two, which we thought was Fletcher Cox. Mm-hmm. He has the biggest gap of anybody between one and two at their respective positions. The other guy that I nominated for that conversation, I don't think it's a big gap per se, but I think Byard is so clearly, I think he's clearly the best safety in football. And it's clearer at his position than every position but Donald's. Like, to me, Byard's more of a no-brainer as the best safety than, I don't know, what a Julio Jones at wide receiver or Ezekiel Elliott at running back, whatever your preference. I think Byard's clearly the best safety in football, all-around safety.
Well, yeah, he does. I mean, he does everything well. And if you're listening to this show, you're probably not the kind of person who needs explained to him that just because he dropped from 8 interceptions in 2017 to 4 in 2018doesn't mean anything. But besides the ball hawking stuff, the center field stuff, he can do anything. He can come down and match up, and he can come in and help in run support as well.
Every guy on the Titans that I talked to, and this was over, these are coaches and players over multiple conversations at different times of the year, said like the 8 interceptions, like, oh yeah, he was very good. He's a ball hawk, but you know, he had 3 of those against Cleveland, and it was just kind of a barrage of freebie interceptions. So the Titans would even tell you the interceptions don't mean anything. Byard was a better all-around defender last year than the year before. His stats just didn't happen to show it. Stats are so finicky for a safety. It's a tip ball here and a loose ball that you scoop up there. I mean, it's almost irrelevant what your statistics are as a safety. So yeah, it's Byard was so much better last year than the year before.
Well, there you go. Kevin Byard, number one. And that brings us to the lightning round. You ready to go, Andy?
Is it a lightning round or a lightning-ish round? I'd like it to be an actual lightning round today, if we could.
It's always a lightning-ish round. 3 hours to go in the show. First question. Safety that is most likely to win defensive player of the year.
And see, to me, that's a human nature question. Like we always say, it's you're analyzing the player, but also the voter. Mm-hmm. And yep. Voters are going to go with, they'll go with Derwin James, Jamal Adams. I don't see any two ways about that. And probably all things equal, they'd lean towards Jamal Adams. Voters are more easily influenced at the safety position than any other, because you can't really see it on TV and it's not always clear what the safety is supposed to be doing. So that's why Eddie Jackson was first team all pro last year. He had a bunch of stats and he had some interceptions, which do show up on TV. That's why Byard was first team all pro the year before that. He had the stats and the interceptions. So it's between Derwin James and Jamal Adams, assuming one of those guys has at least 5 interceptions.
Yeah. I was going to say Derwin James, because I think Derwin James might have like 6 to 8 sacks, and I think that might push it over the top.
You think so? He'd have to blitz a lot. I mean, that would be so. Darius Leonard last year, different position, but actually not a super dissimilar player. Both long-bodied guys. Mm-hmm. Leonard for the Colts had 7 sacks, I believe, on about 50 pass rushes on the season. So 50 pass rushes is about 3 a game. I don't know. I mean, that'd be a high sack rate for Derwin James. Because I figure, let's say he blitzes what? How many times a game? 5.5 over under?
Are they going to up that, though?
Well, I think that is upping it. I think last year, maybe we need you have to be careful. I was going to say get the like advanced stats out on this to see how many times he blitzed. But you have to be careful a little bit with how you analyze blitz stats, because some of them are just a function of how the man coverage plays out. They're not mm-hmm. actually calling a blitz for you. It's just you're guarding a guy who happened to stay in and block. So you decide, okay, I'll go blitz rather than just stand here and watch him block. So I don't know what the Chargers will call. They're not a big man-to-man defense, so they're a zone defense, and it's hard to – I think they should blitz more, but I don't know if they'll do it. That's my concern.
All right. I was going to say 3.5 sacks and then 6 QB hits last year on top of that.
That's what he had? Okay.
Yeah. We shall see. Next question.
Is your answer Derwin James in?
I'm going with Derwin James, yeah. Next one, best offseason addition. And just to give you suggestions, it was Landon Collins to Washington, Earl Thomas to Baltimore, LaMarcus Joyner to Oakland, Tyrann Mathieu to Kansas City, Adrian Amos to Green Bay, Clinton Dix to Chicago, Weddle to the Rams. What do you like the best?
Are we factoring the money?
You can if you want to.
I think the best was Earl Thomas to Baltimore. I think the best bang for the buck will be Weddle to the Rams. And the guy we probably need to talk about a little bit, Gary, because I imagine some listeners are saying, where's Tyrann Mathieu in this list? I was surprised he got the deal he did from Kansas City. I was happy for him, and I think he's a talented player. I don't think he looks the same in matchup coverages. I know some teams really enjoyed running slant patterns against him last year, just guys running away from Mathieu. And I thought he had a few assignment mistakes and help coverage, especially out of matchup zones in Houston, which is a big part of their scheme. And he won't be asked to do that as much in Kansas City. But I was just surprised that Mathieu, I thought that contract looked a little bit like maybe trading on reputation just a little bit.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I'm going Earl Thomas for this question.
The answer
as well here. Yeah.
Yeah.
And breakout player for 2019, or your underappreciated player from around the league?
Well, we already touched on Quandre Diggs, of course, so we probably don't need to. You know, I'm going to go way off there. I'm doing a guy that didn't even get a vote, and I want to say Micah Hyde, who did get a vote in our thing. I think Hyde's pretty well appreciated. He's a really good player for Buffalo, though. The guy that I'm going to mention is Jeff Heath in Dallas. They signed George Iloka, who looked like a rising star in Cincinnati years ago, and he pretty much leveled off, and it hasn't kind of played out that way. And I think teams want Iloka to be a little bit more physical and aggressive. Iloka's more talented than Heath. I don't think that means Iloka will supplant Heath. I'm sure he signed in Dallas thinking he would. But Jeff Heath, to me, is a pretty solid player within the context of what Dallas asks him to do. They move their safeties around depending on whether it's a running down or a passing down. Heath gives them the flexibility enough to do that. He's comfortable everywhere. And then I think he's a pretty good robber defender, which means he's good at swooping down to the middle of the field in man coverage and being kind of an intermediate help defender there.
Now, I think there's absolutely something to be said for Heath sort of solidifying that defense and the struggles they had when he was not in the lineup in recent years here. I'll go with Malik Hooker as my breakout. I guess he's already sort of mini broken out, but if they can get a little bit more of a pass rush going here and allow him to do a little more ball hawking there in Indianapolis, he only had 2 interceptions a year ago. I think he could be your breakout guy who ends up around the ball a lot. Whether it converts into interceptions or not, we'll see. But I think he's capable of being like a 6 to 8 interception guy.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. The Colts they run the same scheme as Dallas. In fact, their coordinator is Matt Eberflus, who came over from Dallas. But Eberflus has grown the scheme into something else entirely. And I would say that's almost a blitzing defense now, which is different completely than the scheme. Dallas's type of scheme is a little more conducive to getting turnovers because it's simple. The ball is, you have eyes on the ball a little bit more. The Colts, with all the blitzing and matchup zones, you have your eyes on the guy you're guarding a little more, so it can be harder to get turnovers. But as a free safety, that probably goes out the window. And Hooker is pretty much just a pure free safety. He doesn't play strong safety for him. And now that I think about it, he's a pure center fielder. Yeah. So I like your pick. That's a great one, that fact.
All right.
You were on today.
What a good way to end the show. Yeah, I'm gonna quickly end this before I undo all this goodwill at this point. But yeah, that's gonna be a wrap for this week. We got one more ranking show to go. Next week we will have cornerbacks. We will also have a special guest. Thanks to our researchers, Reed Foster, who was our third voter this week, Ryan Taylor. They make us sound smart every week. Thank you, as always, to producer Brandon Nix for putting up with all of our nonsense. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. You are the best. We have mailbag coming up. We have all average team reveal coming up. And that's sending your all sort of replacement level type of guy. You can send it a whole team. You can just nominate a single player, whatever you want to do. And all second chance guy, that's a guy who looked like he was not going to do anything in his career and then had sort of a breakout. Whether he changed teams or not, it's up to you. What did you say, Andy? You want guys who did change teams.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Are you talking about the all second acting?
Yeah.
How could it be? Yeah, that's the premise of it.
You can have a second act within a team.
No, these are guys that change teams.
Well, you know what it takes to impress Andy with this one. So keep that in mind when you send your nominations to talkback@themmqb.com. You can also get us on Twitter or on Facebook. And of course, if you don't already, please subscribe to the MMQB podcast family wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, radio.com/10things, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We'll see you next week.